Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time on our Monday mornings. And we're also going to talk about songs that don't mean what you think they mean. And also another topic about some music is songs that iconic songs that the artists of the, of each song really hate. So we're going to get into that, talk a little bit more music, and our phone number is 312-981-7200 if you would like to join us. So that's all coming up here. But now it's time for the movie reviews, as we do every Monday morning. Jim Liskowski, Eric Childress join me to review all the new movies, and then we'll talk about box office as well. So let's welcome the guys to the show. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Nick, how are you?
All right. Okay, let's first of all, Eric, why don't you remind everybody about the Chicago Critics Film Festival and some of the things that are happening and how they can get tickets and all that good stuff.
Yeah, well, if you go to ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com, you'll see not just the entire schedule, but links on where you can buy both tickets to all the individual screenings and passes that are good for the entire festival. Passes only cost $150, and that'll get you into every single screening that you want, as well as the closing night festivities. So that is actually your best bet. And people, you know, who are looking at not just the films, but the guests we're going to have. Tom Skerritt's going to be there for a 40th anniversary screening of Alien.
And I'm going to corner him and just talk to him about the Dead Zone all night.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's fine. That's great. So that's going to be Saturday night, May 18th. The festival runs May 17th to the 23rd at the Music Box Theater. Tatiana Maslany from Orphan Black is going to be there, along with Tom Cullen from Weekend, and Jay Duplass of the Duplass Brothers. Will be there Tuesday night, May 21st, for a screening of their film Pink Wall, which we saw at South by Southwest and really liked. We're going to be screening Danny Boyle's Yesterday. We're going to be screening a film called Blinded by the Light, which really took off at Sundance, about a Pakistani teenager who was inspired by the music of Bruce Springsteen. So we got two movies, one about Bruce Springsteen, one about the Beatles and the inspiration that they bring to people. And opening night is going to be really special. It's a local production called St. Francis. You can bet that pretty much the entire production is going to be there. Should be a really packed house. And there's so many events going on throughout the week that people are going to be a part of, including closing night, where Jim Gaffigan will be here for a really just fantastic moving film called Light from Light. One of the films that really kind of blew us away as we were sort of searching through all these movies we wanted to program.
Oh, all right. Well, you can go to the Music Box website as well as mm-hmm. the Chicago Critics. It's Chicago Critics Fest, right? Is that the website?
So which one? Our website or the...
The ChicagoCriticsFest.com? Is that the website?
ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com.
Yeah. Okay, ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com. That'll get you, and you can get tickets there and all that cool stuff. And
mm-hmm.
And it's gonna be a great time. All of it takes place at the Music Box. So
that's right. Yeah, all in the big 700 seat venue.
All right, very cool. All right. Well, speaking of the Music Box, Eric, why don't you tell us about Hail Satan?
Okay. Well, the title immediately might seem off-putting to some because this is a movie about the so-called founded Satanic Temple that was founded in 2013. Now, when people think of an organized group of Satan worshippers, they might think of the days of Anton LaVey and his following, back in the 60s and 70s. But this is actually a much different group of people. This is not a group that is, while the idea of worshiping a deity like Satan is appealing more to them looking into Christianity. This is really not just about a group of people who are sort of the what people might think of Satan worshippers. They're not the kind of things you see in movies. They're not, the people that everyone feared, the sort of the Paradise Lost days and things like that. No, this is a group that's actually have probably a little bit more in common with the Yes Men. Where they're not exactly pranksters, but they're actually using their platform to basically call out religious hypocrisy throughout the country. Much of that which has to deal with Christianity in the way that the religious right and politicians have sort of co-opted Christianity for their own messages of sort of hate and anti-women and, you know, a bunch of things like that. One of the sort of the prevailing things that we see throughout this film is whenever some local courthouse or something like that wants to, you know, put up erect a statue of the Ten Commandments, on their lawn. And their goal is to, like, well, if you're going to have the Ten Commandments there, how can you then restrict us from putting up a large goat-themed Satan on the same lawn? After all, we're all in the same boat. It's religious hypocrisy if you don't let us do it. And it often they often succeed at doing this because it's just the nature of the beast, no pun intended, that there's a lot of hypocrisy when it comes to this. And this is a documentary that was done by a filmmaker named Penny Lane, who has done some really interesting documentaries over the last few years. She did the film R. Nixon, which is a really sort of a really kind of fresh take on the presidency of Richard Nixon, as well as a film a couple years ago called Nuts. That's this really crazy true story about this doctor who was selling an impotence cure based on what he found in goat testicles. So there's definitely a goat theme to her last couple movies. But this is, you know, sort of a story right in my wheelhouse. The idea of the sort of the political hypocrisy when it comes to religious freedom in this country, and the way that they sort of tackle the idea that they worship Satan, okay, but not the bad stuff. Really, their goal and their mission for who they're actually worshiping is actually founded on a very fundamental principle that Satan actually has in league with America, and that's simply freedom. It's just the idea that as kids, when there's a really great scene in the movie where one of the kids, or one of the guys, now as an adult, talked about how as a kid, how he didn't understand why it was a bad thing that, Satan would tempt Eve or tempt Jesus with fundamental things like why are you doing this, do this and be comfortable, and that's sort of one of the themes throughout this film, and it's really kind of a fascinating way to look at a different religion in a crazy subsect as it might be, but it's a really funny documentary, and I really enjoyed it.
Okay, Jim, what'd you think?
Yeah, I'm right with Eric on this one. I thought this was a really fascinating documentary that I was also very entertained by at times. I was a little skeptical even after seeing the trailer for this, mainly because I thought this could mainly play like an advertisement for, kind of this radical organization and not much else. But, Eric's 100% right with, how this organization here, they basically embrace Satan as this embodiment of the rebellion against tyranny and freedom. Yeah, it's just like, it's a really fascinating idea to explore in not just a documentary form, but just to showcase why, a community like this is attractive to, social pariahs that don't necessarily fit into, your conventional religious community. And it's just a really funny experience, too. I think what drew me in, it's almost like on a punk rock level of creative mischief that some of these members decide to do. And there's just a lot of engaging information regarding, how people have responded over the years to satanic worship in any form, including moments where they cover pop culture and certainly the history of the media, and certainly something like Paradise Lost too. So I found all that really interesting. I think there's a couple of missed opportunities that I think could have been explored in more detail with like the schism within these kind of like rival factions of this temple, because they're essentially nonviolent, but then one of them delivers a real rousing speech that suggests that they should do something very violent that I won't give away, but that has very negative consequences for the person that gave the speech. And I think they could have gone a little bit deeper into that, what that all meant and what that all means for the organization. It's just kind of brushed over a little bit. So I found that sort of, internal conflict very interesting, but it's not explored to great length. This is really a lot of fun, and it's something that you don't get to experience every day. And a lot of these people are very intelligent and very ethical in sort of practicing their own personal philosophy through what is essentially, collective activism. And, you sort of start rooting for them as the film continues. So, I'm definitely recommending this. I don't think it's a groundbreaking documentary, but it's really enlightening and thought-provoking that I would definitely recommend for the curious.
Okay. Hang on, you guys, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. When we come back, I'll tell you what I thought of Hail Satan right after we take this break for the news on 720 WGN.
Of light in the skies over Hollywood. Player.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on 720 WGN. We're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And I'm your overnight dude here every weekday morning from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. My dad is going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday and it's a jokey time. And we got the Monday morning movie reviews, which we're doing right now. Eric and Jim are with me every week to review the movies. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
And thank you.
All right. Before the break, Eric and Jim told us about what they thought of this documentary called Hail Satan. And it's actually Hail Satan. That's actually the name of it. Because there's a question mark. Yeah. I thought this movie was fantastically entertaining. It was a different approach than I thought it was going to be. I didn't think it was going to be as funny as it was, because it's a really funny movie. There's a really a lot of funny stuff in this movie, and some of the real people who are obviously, they're real because it's a documentary, they're real characters. I mean, there's some people in this movie that are just downright hilarious. And I do think it says a lot about hypocrisy and freedom in really cool ways. And these are likable Satanists. and they've got something to say, and they're intelligent, and there really is a major point in this movie. Now I have not seen Penny Lane's other films. I'm aware of a couple of them. I think, did you review Nuts for the film festival, Eric?
Yeah, we had Nuts played. I think it was Sundance where it played, and actually played our festival.
Oh, yeah.
That year.
That's, yeah. Right. Okay. Hmm. But I have not seen it. Now I want to go back and I want to see her other movies I really thought this was very unique in the way the story was told. I think there was a lot of insight. It certainly covered a group of people that I have never followed before in any possible way, and I think it's fair in the coverage of it, and I think it has a lot to say about freedom and freedom of speech and religious freedom. And it's also just very entertaining, and there are really big laughs in this movie, and I was entertained from beginning to end. I thought it was terrific. I really did. So that's three recommendations for Hail Satan, which is playing at the Music Box, and I actually highly recommend it. All right, cool. Okay, Jim, tell us about The Intruder.
Oh boy, yes, this is a home invasion thriller from director Dion Taylor. And we first meet a very young, attractive California couple with, almost everything that one could hope for. And they decide to live the big city in search of their dream home. And no, this is not a remake of Funny Farm. We have Scott, played by Michael Ealy, and Annie, played by Megan Good. And they just really embody people who want to move forward in life and, you know, start a family and hopefully just settle down. And of course, we start out with the idyllic situation and things are going perfectly for them. And they do, in fact, find their dream home, which only cost $3.3 million. What a steal. So they're settling into their new rural, far from everyone and everything life. And they quickly realize that there's one thing you can never account for, and that's the former owner of this particular dream home. And in this case, the former owner is a gruff, gun-loving guy named Charlie, played by the great Dennis Quaid, who seems to have, I guess you could say, separation anxiety with the house and just the environment that he knows so well, and it's certainly kept up over the years. And yet at the same time, he's also drawn to the new tenants. He keeps wanting to hang out with them in some capacity. He also had lost his wife, and he wants to eventually relocate to Florida to live with his daughter. But of course, you pretty much know right from the get-go that there's much more to the story of Charlie. We soon discover that Scott and Annie just cannot seem to get rid of him. One day he's just mowing the lawn. Another, he's trying to put up Christmas decorations. Or he's just dropping in to indulge in some more wine and pizza while hubby is out working late. So eventually the husband is naturally upset by this intrusion into their lives and begins doing some digging into Charlie's background. And of course, he soon realizes that him and his wife might be in some serious trouble here. Yeah, so if you've seen the trailer for this, you kind of know what you're in for. And in some ways, it reminds me a little bit of what Neil Jordan did earlier this year with Greta, in that it's like a throwback to 80s and 90s domestic thrillers like Pacific Heights, Unlawful Entry, Single White Female. And the problem is that the direction here is not nearly as confident or adept at creating suspense as someone like Neil Jordan can do. There's a lot of weird editing moments, some very, very questionable character decisions. And throughout most of this running time, a lot of unintended hilarity. In a way, Nick, this could have been our follow-up field trip to Swim Fan, which we all enjoyed riffing on over a decade ago, and it's kind of in that same ballpark, more or less. I think, the main couple here are fine. Even, like I said, their characters constantly keep doing things that are very questionable. But really, the reason why I wanted to see this is similar to you, Nick, in that I'm a huge Dennis Quaid fan, and he is really hamming it up here. Really, really much, and in a way that's kind of makes this a so bad it's entertaining experience. I mean, the story here has been done to death. You know exactly where it's going. And the only positive thing I can say is that watching Dennis Quaid as a deranged psychopath is kind of entertaining. But I also am not going to go out of my way to recommend this because it's also really silly, really implausible, and downright laughable, like I mentioned. So I mean, as someone who kind of likes these movies when they came out in the 80s and 90s, I was hoping for a little bit more. But if you just want to watch Dennis Quaid go bonkers, you could have a good time with this. And that's pretty much the only positive thing I can say about this pretty ridiculous movie. Then again, if you see this with somebody that enjoys making fun of movies, it does have a nice blend of bad movie signposts and really stupid plotting that might put this on par with something like The Room to some degree or another. But overall, I'm not going to recommend The Intruder unless you want to watch Dennis Quaid chew scenery for 90 minutes.
Yeah, no, it's not a good movie, but I had a good time watching Dennis Quaid. It's a ridiculous movie. But I enjoy Dennis Quaid doing anything, and he's just clearly just like, all right, this is a ridiculous script, so I'm going to go nuts. And he's clearly just like trying to elevate the material by just being ridiculous, and it's fun to watch him. The guy who wrote this movie has written this movie 19 times. Because he wrote Obsessed with Idris Elba and Beyonce, and he wrote Lakeview Terrace with this guy just basically,
oh my god,
yeah, he writes the same movie. Yeah. He writes the same movie over and over and over again in different ways, and he doesn't get it better.
He didn't write Cold Creek Manor, did he?
No, he didn't. He didn't write that. But it's poorly directed too. But the fun part of it, I mean, it's a ridiculous movie, and you know that going in. If you've seen the trailers for it, you know exactly what you're going to get. If you're a Dennis Quaid fan and you want to watch him chew up scenery, that's the only reason to see this movie. Otherwise, you've seen it 9,000 times on basic cable. You know what I mean?
So it's
that kind of movie. But Dennis Quaid. I love Dennis Quaid. And I guess if you're like a fan of Dennis Quaid and you want to see him ham it up for an hour and a half, then that's cool. So, all right. But I'm not recommending it because it's ridiculous. Okay. Guys, hang out, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Eric Childress, Jim Laskowski are here. We've got one more movie to review, and we'll do it right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Monday morning. Now, we got some music topics that we're going to get to, songs that don't mean what you think they mean, and actually iconic songs that the artists of them hate. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time and much more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Movie reviews. Every Monday morning we do them, and Eric and Jim review the movies with me. Let's welcome them back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thanks again.
All right. Eric, tell us about Long Shot.
Okay. Well, this film stars Charlize Theron as the Secretary of State. She discovers that the current president, who is a real nincompoop, is not going to run for re-election. So she sees this as an opportunity to sort of build her case to become the first female president of the United States. So as she's about to embark on this sort of worldwide tour to work on this climate change initiative to sort of boost her brand, all of her people want her to sort of boost her own profile, her personality profile. Enter Mr. Flarsky, played by Seth Rogen, who is a freelance journalist who the online blog that he writes for has just been usurped by a big conglomerate that is not exactly known for left-leaning politics. And in outrage, he ends up leaving and having without a job. He runs into the Secretary of State, who just happens to be the person who babysat for him when he was 13 years old. So as they reconnect with one another, she takes an interest in his past writings and offers him a job to be a part of her her campaign, be part of her speechwriting team to help sort of boost her brand. Well, there's close proximity between the two of them, and they sort of rediscover each other again and embark on a sort of a getting-to-know-you campaign so he can write for her what she needs. A relationship develops between the two of them. And as everyone around them, in sort of typical political rom-com fashion, I guess, is trying to tear them apart because they know this is just not good for the potential campaign, they are just constantly drawn closer together. So the mixture of political, sort of a political rom-com, has been done before in the past and has been done quite well. Movies like Dave, for example, and certainly The American President, fall within that realm. And this one, it seems like, Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen, the first thing you think about is what a potential mismatched couple they are. Throw in the whole, crush as, a kid that was being babysat. This has sort of the potential to be kind of a disaster in the making, but that is definitely not the case here. And the good a big reason for that is not just because the movie is incredibly funny. As a Seth Rogen fan, I find so much of his work just genuinely funny, and he brings that constantly here to the story. But the remarkable chemistry that Theron and Rogen actually have together, because while this film is certainly built on the type of comedy that you're sort of used to getting in Seth Rogen comedies, very raunchy, very very R-rated, the movie sort of gives way to that a bit. It's still very funny in the second half, but to really developing this relationship and the scenes between the two of them together. The unsung hero and all the praise that this movie is actually getting is director Jonathan Levine, who has directed Rogan before in The Night Before, and even more so, better so in the movie 50-50 with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He has a real nice knack for balancing sort of outrageous comedy with real sort of personal genuine stories. And while this movie leans a lot referencing Pretty Woman, it actually does so in a way that really sort of understands the nostalgia for these characters and the way that they that they have felt for each other in this time. It feels real. It doesn't feel manufactured. There's moments between them that don't feel cliched at all, and it only makes the people trying to tear them apart all the more you just kind of get itchy watching them do that. The politics of the movie is not completely fleshed out. Dave, an American President, I think handled that material a bit better. The movie kind of takes some turns in the second half that I was kind of hoping it would avoid, but it didn't really matter to me because I wanted, in great rom-com fashion, you actually want these characters to be together. You like them, I've praised Rogan a lot, but Theron is terrific here too. We don't get to see her doing comedy very much, and I remember talking about this movie when I saw it at South by Southwest, and I was talking with a colleague of ours, and we were just sort of remarking on just how many different types of roles Charlize Theron has played over the years, and how truly versatile she has actually become. And it's really like the kind of thing that deserves more praise and should be looked under the microscope a little bit better, because she really has turned into one of our finest actresses. Rogan, for my money, is one of our funniest, and the pairing of them together, I think, works in spades here in Long Shot.
Okay. All right. Jim, what'd you think?
Agreed 100%. I thought this movie was pretty great. A real surprise. I mean, despite being a fan of the two main actors, I just went, oh, it just looks like it's probably going to be your typical romantic comedy. And, you know, even if it does kind of, I think it avoids most of the cliches in a refreshing way. And, you know, like Eric mentioned, it's kind of like a gender-flipped American president, only it includes, you know, Rogan's particular brand of profane verbal humor, which I can understand wearing thin for some people, but it definitely hasn't for me. I still find him very funny in a lot of movies, and it does play like a screwball comedy at times, but there's some real stakes, and these two characters that you follow, I think that, you know, that you sort of root for them and you care about them, and yes, they make a couple of impulsive decisions along the way, but you know, I do think they handle some you know, pertinent issues surrounding, you know, sexism and just relationships in ways that I think are definitely engaging throughout. And it doesn't, and it also doesn't turn into a full blown message movie either. I mean, well, like Eric said, the reason to see this is just the chemistry here between Rogan and Theron, who are absolutely are wonderful together in this. And you know, Charlize Theron she can just be cast in just about anything. I love her in roles like this, and you know, especially something like Young Adult, and of course she can kick butt in Fury Road or Atomic Blonde. She's definitely one of the, you know, our great actresses now, and I mean, she always has been, I should say, but I mean, it's just a joy to watch her, especially in something like this. There's a sequence here where she's trying to de-escalate a terrorist attack while a little inebriated. Well, we'll just say that's just very, very funny. And there's also a sequence that precedes that involves ecstasy that normally I would find tiresome, because Lord knows we've seen that a lot in many comedies. But the two of them even make something like that really, really hilarious. And it's also kind of funny to see Andy Serkis playing a Rupert Murdoch villain type at one point, and O'Shea Jackson Jr. as Rogan's best friend. Oh, just always had me smiling. I don't know if it'll go down as a new romantic comedy classic or not, because like Eric said, I don't think the political angles here are, you know, fully fleshed out. But let's face it, this is just a really good old fashioned romantic comedy that's very, very funny, and subverts some stereotypes along the way. So I mean, it's fresh and old fashioned. So I'm highly recommending this one, since this is one of the most entertaining comedies so far this year.
Okay, guys, hang on. All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
You guys hang on. We'll take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you what I thought of Long Shot, and then Eric will stick around and we will talk box office as well. It's all coming up right here on 720 WGN.
You can see all the stars as you walk along Hollywood Boulevard. Some that you recognize, some that you hardly even
welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey time. And we're in the middle of the movie reviews. Before the break, Eric and Jim both gave positive reviews to the new romantic comedy with Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen called Long Shot. Let's welcome the guys back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Jim, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. I love this movie. I loved it. And I didn't expect it to like it as much as I did. I run hot and cold on Seth Rogen. I have a low tolerance for the for like the This Is the End stuff and the, you know, the, what was the Christmas movie that Levine directed?
Night Before.
I have a very low tolerance for that stuff, but I still think he's funny. I always have. I mean, I have a low tolerance for it. But I think he's great here. I think this, personally, I think this is the best performance that Seth Rogen has ever given. I think he's really good in it, and he's very funny, and you really like him. And I liked how passionate the character was about, you know, about his beliefs. I think it's one of the most likable characters that Seth Rogen has ever played. Charlize Theron is fantastic in this movie. She is so great, and she's really funny, and has never really, you know, has done this type of comedy before, sort of the really sort of big R-rated kind of comedy stuff. I mean, she's done funny movies in the past, and, you know, and she can handle that kind of stuff. But a lot of the, you know, the comedies that she's done in the past, like you mentioned, like young adult and stuff like that, those are, they're more subtle. They're not as like big and kind of broad as this is. And she handles it so well. That scene that you were talking about, Jim, where she's on the molly, and she's trying to negotiate the release of a hostage is hilarious. I mean, it's really, really funny, and she plays it perfectly. The chemistry between the two leads is great. You would never expect that, you know. You would never expect a romantic comedy with Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen, and there are sparks between the two of them. They've got fantastic chemistry, and you like both of the characters, and you root for them. The supporting cast here is great. You mentioned O'Shea Jackson Jr., who's really funny in the movie and has a lot of great scenes. The two assistants that that are Charlize Theron's assistants, June Diane Raphael and Ravi Patel, are great in this movie. Specifically, June Diane Raphael, she's fantastic in the movie. Lots of other supporting performances are really interesting. Alexander Skarsgård has a couple of really funny moments. That involve his laugh. There's that, and Bob Odenkirk is hilarious as the president. He's really, really fun. I got to tell you something. I didn't even recognize Andy Serkis at first.
Me neither.
I was like,
I didn't know it wasn't him until after the movie.
I was like, wait a minute, that's Andy. You know, I mean, he's good at it too. He plays sort of this, you know, billionaire publishing guy, right wing guy, and he's really obnoxious in it. And you root for these people, I thought the opening scene, because Seth Rogen infiltrates infiltrates some Nazis to do a story on him, and they force him to get a swastika tattoo, and that turns into something very, very funny later in the movie. And it's just, you know, it's really, really good. And again, you know, I mean, if you want to criticize the movie about not taking the politics part as seriously as, you know, other films that kind of fall into this category, you could do that, but I didn't care. I like the star power here. The two leads were so good. And I'll tell you something, man, there were times when there are big laughs in this movie. When they send him to go get to you know, because he doesn't have a suit, and they're going to like a formal function, and then June Diane Raphael dresses him in a in this outfit that's supposed, you know, that is culturally, you know, like the old school kind of an outfit. So just looking at Seth Rogen in this outfit is hilarious. And then he sees an older guy who's dressed just like him outside, when he's having a smoke. And I just, there's so many funny things. And it doesn't back away from being vulgar. There's a video that happens a little bit late in the movie. That does not, if you're a fan of the vulgar, you know, sort of over the top vulgar kind of stuff that Seth Rogen is known for, you won't be disappointed with that. But everybody plays this really well, and I loved it. I think it's a great, you know, it doesn't break any, you know, new ground or anything, but you really care about these characters, man. And I was rooting for them, to stay together. Terrifically entertaining movie, and I wish more people would have seen it over the weekend.
Yeah.
But it's really, really, really good, and everybody in it is great. And the two leads have fantastic chemistry. I loved it. I thought Longshot was great. So, all right. And I liked it even more than I thought I would. You know what I mean? A lot more than I thought I would. So, but it's terrific.
Yeah, not to mention that... that Boys to Men show up at
oh,
one
yeah,
point.
Oh, yeah, Boys to Men are in it. Actually, the use of music is really cool.
It was
a lovely, lovely, lovely scene, where the two of them are, and Seth Rogen cleans up really well. Like, that scene when she comes out of the elevator and he's in the tux, I'm like, look at Seth Rogen, because mostly he looks like a goofball all the time. But there's a lovely scene where they dance to Roxette. They're off in a room by themselves, and he pulls out his phone and, plays.
It might be my favorite scene in the movie.
It's beautiful. It's really beautiful and really lovely. And it earns that. This movie earns all that stuff. And I was with it from the beginning to end. If you want romance, there's romance in here. If you want laughs, there's big laughs. Provided by a lot of different people in this movie. I'm a huge fan of this movie. I thought it was great. So that's a long shot. All right. What do we got next week?
Oh,
we got The Hustle.
We got Detective Pikachu.
Detective Pikachu.
Oh, yeah. God.
Tom, my producer, seems very excited about Detective Pikachu for some reason.
I don't explain it to me, but anyway, and Palms.
Right. And The Hustle is Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, isn't it? It's Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
The remake, yeah.
It's a remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, but with women playing the roles.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see if that's okay. We'll see if that's funny. We got that next week as well. All right. Eric, you stick around. Jim, thanks, man.
Okay, thank you, man.
We'll talk to you next week. There you go. Jim Laskowski will be back next week. All right, Eric, let's talk about the box office here.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very sad to see that Longshot. I mean, The Intruder made more money than Longshot.
Yeah, this to me is the story of the week. As far as Avengers is the story of the week, but there's something troubling about Longshot not making the money.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, the Avengers Endgame again was number one. There was no surprise there. Made $145.8 million. Its total in America is $616 million. Is it what is that compared to?
Well, I mean, it is. Titanic took a long time to make $600 million, and Avengers Endgame did it in 10 days.
Oh my God!
And not just that, but while everyone was sort of had their eye on this ball, everyone was sort of looking like, is Avengers Endgame going to have the best second weekend ever? And it fell short. It actually fell short of The Force Awakens second weekend by about $4 million. Mm. And while it was doing that, over here on the other side, it just became the second highest grossing film worldwide of all time.
That's amazing.
It passed $2.18 billion. That is more than Titanic. It took Force Awakens 54 days to reach $2 billion. It took Avengers Endgame 12.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That really is unbelievable. Man, man.
So Avatar, now it's just like a waiting game for Avatar to fall as the highest grossing film of all time.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, that's even bigger than anybody thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Okay, so The Intruder made $11 million. That's not really surprising, right?
I felt that it was probably going to do either just under 10 or a little bit over 10, so that's kind of right on cue. The fact that it took second place is the big surprise,
right.
But that's because of the next movie, which, oh my God.
Yeah, so Longshot only made $10 million, and I got to say, I'm really surprised by that.
I am too. I am too, and I'm sorry, I think the blame has to go with Lionsgate on this. I think any other studio opens this movie to probably no less than $18 million.
Yeah.
I think. Seth Rogen has a pretty good track record. Some obviously higher than others, but Lionsgate, the last seven wide releases they have had that are not Tyler Perry movies have not hit a $15 million opening weekend.
Wow!
Now that might change in a couple weeks when John Wick opens.
Well, yeah, that will change in a couple of weeks, trust me.
Right. They've been trying to, ever since, Hunger Games and Twilight, they've been sort of chasing the dragon of these franchise films, and yeah, John Wick has done fairly well for them, but you know, and they've had like successes like La La Land and Wonder,
right?
But really, I mean, it's just it's really kind of sad that this movie couldn't find an audience, and I gotta blame Lionsgate on this one, because
yeah.
I don't think it's Rogan. I don't think people have a problem with Charlize Theron. I don't want to believe that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, it's clearly. I mean, this should have been the Notting Hill to the Phantom Menace back in 1999.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it just and the fact that Lionsgate couldn't make that happen,
yeah.
and really they blew it too, because this movie was supposed to open the first week of June, and they were so confident in it that they moved it up into the Avengers wake,
yeah.
And I mean I get their thinking behind that kind of, but they couldn't make it happen,
right?
So that I think they should have, you know, built up some more screenings, built some more word of mouth on this thing, and then unleashed it in June, and it would have had a little more clear sailing, and this thing probably would have ended up making $75 million or something.
Yeah, it's too bad, because it's a terrific movie.
Yeah.
And then Ugly Dolls was the other debut at $8.5 million.
Yeah,
that made no money.
No.
All right.
That just, I mean, a plush toy line.
Yeah.
Turned into an animated film. It cost like $45 million to make.
Oh my God! Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then to round out the top five, Captain Marvel just won't quit.
Nope.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's just crazy. Well, all right. Well, so what are you thinking next week? Avengers will still be number one, right?
Avengers has still got to be number one, because if Detective Pikachu takes number one next week, I'm think I'm done. I think I might just give it up. I don't understand. People are trying to tell me that this thing is going to make like $250 million. I don't understand this.
Yeah. Well,
I think it's an open one. I think there is interest. It's geared towards kids and whatnot. But it's like, I mean, I don't know. I don't understand. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I plead complete ignorance on what this movie is going to make. I think it's going to do fairly well.
Yeah.
But I just don't see it doing $250 million.
Yeah. All right. I don't understand it anyway either.
Yeah.
All right. Well. All right, Eric. We'll talk about that next week.
We will.
And thanks a lot, man.
You got it.
There you go. Eric Childress, everybody. He joins me every week to review the movies, and we talk box office as well. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back on 720 WGN.